For more than a decade, Saturdays and Illegal Curve have been synonymous with one another. With insight, analysis, and interviews regarding the Winnipeg Jets, the Manitoba Moose, and all around the NHL, here are Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg, and your host, Drew Mandel. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now.
The last weekend of the regular season. Congratulations, one and all. We've made it. And with that, I say
without
good
any
morning.
Separations or divorces.
Not yet, at least, Ezzy. You don't know about the paperwork might be handed out on Monday or something. The process servers, I don't think they work on the weekend, but stay tuned on Monday. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Dave Minuk, with Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, here to talk about the Winnipeg Jets, a massive game this afternoon. You know it. You don't need me to tell you about it. The Jets and the Avalanche. It's the team that wins is in the driver's seat for second place in the Central Division, and yet still an outside shot at first place, although I expect the Dallas Stars will likely take care of their business later on this afternoon as well. Nonetheless, yeah. It's a
against
big,
the Seattle big Kraken, we should mention, who the Jets right. play on Tuesday. And if Dallas, for some reason, doesn't beat Seattle or doesn't get 2 points, I should say, same thing, I guess. But Dallas actually has to get 2 points because the Jets hold the tiebreaker. We were talking about this, like, right? That's the reason why we were 3 minutes late, folks. We were going over all the different combinations and permutations. Like, I can't remember, Drew, a year in which both in the Eastern Conference and Western Conference, you had seeding both at the top, at the bottom, in the middle. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what you want. Like, the Leafs are going to play the Bruins, but they could also play the Panthers. Like, the Golden Knights could play the Stars, but they could also play the Canucks. Like, it's just, it's the best time of year for sure.
There's a lot. It's a big, big Saturday in the NHL. Of course, our focus will be on the Jets and the Avalanche, which will take place in about 6 hours' time. Massive game. Really, the numbers are such. First, the Jets have the tiebreaker against the Avalanche. That's the important thing to note. So, yes, the Jets are tied with each having 104 points, but the Jets are in second place by virtue of having that tiebreaker. The Jets have the three games tonight against Colorado, or this afternoon against Colorado, Tuesday against the Kraken, and then Thursday against Vancouver. Colorado, conversely, they have the Jets this afternoon. Then they have to travel. They got a second half of a back-to-back. That's taking place tomorrow. After they play the Jets today, they have to head to Vegas to play the Golden Knights tomorrow afternoon. And then they wrap up with Edmonton on home ice next Thursday. So if you certainly want to look at it from a scheduling perspective, the Jets are in an advantageous position in that they get that Seattle. The weakest of all the games between the Jets and the Avs is the Jets' opponent on Tuesday against the Seattle Kraken. Really brass tacks it down. The Jets, if they win 2 out of 3, are likely to have home ice advantage. Because if they win 2 out of 3, that means Denver has to win or Colorado has to win all their games, even including today. So it's almost a bigger game for the Avalanche today than it is for the Jets a little bit, which is a bizarre thing to say, but that's by virtue of that tiebreaker that the Jets currently hold, Dave. The Jets sort of do have a little bit more of a buffer, not advocating that they should go out and lose the game, but the Jets do have a little bit more of a buffer than the Avalanche do.
Michael Buffer or a Bruce Buffer?
It doesn't matter. Whichever Buffer brother you want to pick. The Avalanche have to be in the mindset that they need to win their last three if they want home ice advantage come playoff time.
Well, right now, the Jets are, as much as they're focused on getting that home ice, they're focused on maintaining the type of play we saw them play on Thursday night against the Dallas Stars, a very good Dallas Stars team, a Dallas Stars team that we didn't see have a lot of holes, but the Jets were able to really sort of stifle what Dallas does well. And because of that, they were, they played a complete 60-minute game. I think one of the biggest disparities I noticed between the two teams in Colorado and Winnipeg, and it's interesting because they have identical records, but where they really differentiate is their goals scored for and goals against. Colorado scored about 55 more goals than Winnipeg. Yeah, Winnipeg's given up 50 less.
To be exact.
Okay.
Big difference as well, Dave. I'm not sure if you thought about this. The Jets don't have Nathan MacKinnon.
That's also a big difference. But as the Jets have also given up 55, I think, less goals than Colorado or something in that of that nature. So
48 to be exact.
48. I have it in the pregame report, but it's not yet posted. So I can't even pillory my own notes. But the point I'm making, Drew, yes, is that there's a disparity, right, of offense versus defense in that regard. So we'll see if the Jets can maintain the structure. Because what's a crazy notion? The Jets maintained a good defensive structure against Dallas, boys, similar to what we saw them do when, as Ezzy talked about before, earlier in the week, when they were on that 34-game run of not allowing more than 3 goals. And what were they doing well? They were playing defensively sound hockey and being opportunistic. And what were they against Dallas? They played defensively sound hockey for the most part. There were some breakdowns. Dallas is, in fact, the first-place team in the Central Division.
In the Western Conference.
And in the Western Conference. But the point is that you have a team that is a very good hockey team that the Jets were able to stifle. So that's what you're looking for against Colorado. Can the Jets maintain the same sort of play against a very good Colorado team that they did against a very good Dallas team?
Yeah. And just, you know, just wanted to mention one thing, Drew. Obviously, you know, we're going to be there is the outside chance the Jets finish first, but I think most people think the Stars are going to take care of business against the Kraken or the Blues. But the other thing is the Blues were just mathematically eliminated yesterday. So Dave and I were joking, like, if for some reason the Stars aren't able to get 2 points against the Kraken this afternoon, St. Louis, you know, is going to play the role of spoiler. So that's the wild card, like, in all of pro sports, right? You look at it and you're like, well, the Blues aren't very good, but that's all they're playing for. Like, right. I don't care what anybody says. The Blues know, they'll know before the game if that game is going to determine whether the Stars finish first, right? So that's all I'm saying. But we're going to go under the assumption the Jets and Avalanche are going to play. And all I wanted to, you know, add to kind of complement what Dave was saying there is that, you know, you look at the Jets and the Avalanche, I don't care what anybody says. The Jets and the Avalanche are both very deep teams. I'm going to give the obvious advantage to the Jets in net. Alexander Georgiev, guys, has struggled, you know, at times this year. I think he's a good goalie, but like when you factor in Lauren Brossoit, I mean, nobody's going to take the combo of Georgiev and Eustace Annanen versus Hellebuck and Brossoit. The Jets have the clear edge there. I joked about Nathan MacKinnon. Obviously, I don't think it's been confirmed if Rantanen's going to play today.
He's expected to play today.
Okay, yeah. There you go. I was trying to, you know, work my sources. I was looking at Corey Massacek's ex-former friend of the show, or I guess current friend of the show.
Yeah. Did you and Corey have a falling out?
No, I was going to say, well, we haven't had him on the show in a while. That's what I meant. But then I was, you know, Adrian Dater. I was looking at a few of the Megan Angley, who we've had on the show before. And so I wasn't sure if Rantanen was going to play. But regardless, I mean, I think you give the big edge in net. And then when you look at the forwards, I still like the Jets forward depth over Colorado's depth. And I realize they brought in Casey Mittelstadt to be their second line center. He's a really good player. They're going to be relatively healthy. But I give the edge. And then you probably give the edge to the Avalanche when it comes to defense. And then when it comes to special teams, you're obviously going to give the edge to the Avalanche, right? So, I'm thinking this is going to be a 6 or 7 game series regardless.
We're not previewing the playoffs yet.
No, I'm just saying.
Slow your roll, boy.
It goes back
to
what Dave said. I mean, this is going to be an epic battle this afternoon with major playoff implications for home ice. But I just look at the series and I'm just really excited, Drew, because I think this is going to be a classic series between the Jets and Avalanche. And we should mention, these teams have never played before in the playoffs.
That's true. They never have met each other in the playoff time. But I think Dave's point is the most important one.
Whole soliloquy doesn't, that's not a major point there, Drew?
I tuned you out entirely. I didn't hear a word you said. But, you know, what Dave was saying, though, is, look, the Jets played one of their best, you know, the game the Jets played on Thursday against Dallas was probably the best game they had played since against a high quality opponent,
the Rangers
game against the Rangers.
Yeah.
And, you know, those have been, you know, those games came, you know, 3 weeks apart from each other. The question is, and what I'll be watching for this afternoon, and what I'm sure we'll be discussing later on this evening or this late afternoon on the post game show, is can the Jets make it 2 in a row? Can they find that consistency that has been so lacking since Christmas? You know, can they find that game that they demonstrated on Thursday against a tremendously high quality opponent? Can they do that again against another tremendously high quality opponent? And then if they can, that's 2 in a row against your two, I'd say, chief Central Division competition this season, and what does that mean come playoff time? Because to me, that means something significant. If the Jets have found the ability or have rediscovered that shutdown mentality, and I don't know if you guys saw the video yesterday that Mike Kelly put out, Mike Kelly of the NHL Network, talking about the Jets and their structure, and when they play with that structure, just how difficult they are. You know, if that's the Jets moving forward into the playoffs, then I think we're talking about a whole different Jets team than we've seen for much of the last few months.
Right. You're 100% right, Drew. And it seems so simplistic, right? Like, if they play within their structure, I think 32 teams would say that. But I think specifically for the Jets, because that was what really propelled them to be, at one point, they were first overall in the league, right? Like, it seems like it was so long ago, but the Jets were first overall for, what was it, guys, 3 days a week, something like that. But the point is, they've been a solid team all year long, but we saw a blip in the second half of the season. There was a kind of 20 to 25 game stretch there where they were 500. And obviously, you know, they've turned it around here with five straight wins. And I agree with you. I mean, that game against Dallas, I will be honest, it wasn't that I didn't think the Jets could beat Dallas, just because Dallas beat the Jets three times in a row. It's not like I was, you know, going into that game thinking, you know, the Jets couldn't beat Dallas, because the Jets have beat many good teams in this league, including Colorado, multiple times, right? Yeah. But it's because of the way they did it. The first period, I mean, when the Jets are playing at their peak, Dave, and everybody's on the same page, so to speak, they frustrate teams.
Yeah.
And Dallas really couldn't get anything going. Like, we talked about that top line, Jason Robertson, Rupe Hintz, you know, Wyatt Johnston, Logan Stankoven, and Jamie Benn. I thought that was the best line. But for the most part, Dallas didn't really have a lot of odd man rushes. Like, you know, I remember Sam Steele had that odd man rush. Miro Haskinen had that rush in the third period. But for the most part, you know, the Jets were just, they had the puck in the Stars zone too much, and they just weren't letting the Stars gather speed,
right,
and really kind of get to work and do what they do best. So I think that, you know, this game is huge, because look, if you're able to win this game, and then obviously you have to win one of your last two games, that extra home date is absolutely huge for a couple of reasons. I know some people don't like to talk about the altitude, but you ask anybody in hockey, you would rather play three games in Colorado, Dave, as opposed to four games, assuming it's a seven game series, right? And obviously you want that extra, you want to start this series with a whiteout. And Drew mentioned this last week, you know, the Jets did lose their two games at home last year, but despite that, I still think you'd rather have home ice, if anything, for the mental edge, right? And I think you would have the mental edge if you beat the Avalanche and then you're able to finish second and get home ice. So there's no question that the Jets can beat the Avalanche, but the reason why we watch the games is to determine if they will, because, you know, the Avalanche are going to be fired up. They've held second place for how long now, right, Dave? So it's going to be a close game. I think it's going to be, it's going to be an absolute epic game. It's not going to have a playoff feel. This game will have a playoff feel, considering these two teams are going to face off in a week.
Yeah, you know, I think that as he, in that instance, makes a number of good points, particularly
that time you listened.
Sometimes I listen. Sometimes I can be quasi articulate.
Yeah, quasi articulate is usually what all we ever strive for out of you. So congratulations, you've achieved our low benchmark. But you know, you do mention make a valid point about the altitude, and that really being a factor if, you know, and when the playoffs begin and home ice advantage and everything else. It's also, I think, the mental aspect of it, Dave, in that if the Jets again play that second consecutive game against an elite opponent, and if they are able to maintain their structure and maintain their discipline, then the Jets, I think, can begin to think of themselves and demonstrate that they too are an elite opponent. Because I think there's a lot of people, maybe not necessarily in Winnipeg, but a lot of people still in the hockey world are maybe waiting for the Jets to prove it come playoff time. You know, we remember the spitting chicklets comment that somebody said the Jets are the biggest frauds, or, you know, a player, anonymous player said that. I think the Jets are looking forward to the opportunities to prove some of these guys wrong, you know, make whomever eat crow, but it starts and can, you know, it started on Thursday in Dallas. It continues today, and then it should roll all the way through the start of the playoffs, which of course they get underway in the NHL next Saturday. And then we don't officially know the schedule for the Jets and the Avalanche series just yet.
Hopefully game one's not on the first night of Passover, but continue.
No, I mean, look, there's a couple of things. Number one, Colorado's a very good home team. They've won 30 games. No other team in the NHL has 30 home wins, I don't think. So Colorado, although interesting, conversely, they're not a great road team.
38-1, by the way.
Yeah, and I believe they're 19-6-5, maybe. I'm not entirely certain, but 19-16, on the road. So not a great road record from a team in Colorado, but, you know, for the Drew.
But again,
point,
Dave, even more reason, sorry, continue, but even more reason why you want to get that extra home game, right?
That's what I was just, yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say. So the whole point from that perspective is that you want to be able to not give Colorado that advantage, which it clearly has been consistently for the entirety of this season. So that's definitely a factor, is removing one extra game from the market in Colorado, which has been, like I said, very good for them and not so good for teams that are visiting. And then the other thing also, Drew, and I think it's important for folks to remember, if the Jets play a good structured game today and they lose, you're okay with that. Again, you obviously want to take the 2 points. You want to be better, closer to clinching that second spot. But if the Jets can actually play a game where they play similar in style and they lose 2-1 or 3-1 if it's an empty netter, my point is that to me is the more important thing to watch for today than the end result. End result's important. I'm not diminishing it. But I think you want to see that the Jets can, like, we've seen it, right? We've seen it in
you want to see that they can ride the waves, right? Because this game, there's going to be waves in this game. This is going to, you know, there's going to be a back and forth in this game, Dave.
For sure. And again, like I said, what we've seen the Jets, and look, you can only stifle these really good opponents for so long, right? Like Dallas, as he laid it out when he was talking about it, Dallas got their opportunities. They just didn't have, as Rick Bonus touched on, 17 scoring chances the way Nashville did on the game before that. So that is what you're looking to see. And so again, we've seen flashes from the Jets where they have a really good period and they shit the bed for the other two periods, or they play two good periods and they're not so good for the third. Again, you can have breakdowns within a game. That happens to every single team, whether it's a Stanley Cup champion, Ezzy, or the 32nd place team. But what you want to do is see that your team, that team, minimize them and stuck to their structure. So like I said, to me, that's the bigger overarching theme that you're going to want to watch, because if you stick to your structure and still lose the game, at least the structure was sound, and you can bring that forward against Seattle, Vancouver, because that to me is what you wanted to see from this team for the last three games of the season and then heading into the playoffs.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. You need to make sure that you are, look, the wins and losses matter. So we're not going to say that they don't matter, but you've qualified for the playoffs. This isn't like you're scratching and clawing like last year, where it comes down to game 81 and that's the game you qualify in. They qualified, you know, however long ago that was now, a week ago, 10 days ago, it was a while ago. We knew that they were a playoff team. Now it's a matter of fine-tuning everything and making sure that, you know, that everything is pointed in the right direction for playoff time, that you're beginning to button up the game so that what you're starting with, you know, next Saturday, next Sunday, next Monday, whenever the Jets first round series begins, is that you know where your baseline is, that your baseline for performance isn't the loose style of hockey we've seen for the last couple of months. Rather, the baseline is more similar to what we saw at the beginning of the middle of the year when they had their most success. That needs to be the minimum. Then you need to build on that. Then you need to increase on that because of the time of the year, because the games are playoff games, because your competition is going to elevate as well. So the Jets know that their baseline has to be tight, defensively sound structure, and then build upon that. The question is, can they do it? And that's the part I'm not fully convinced on just yet, because we have only seen it a game here, a game there. Do it two games in a row against Dallas and today against Colorado, then I think you really have something that you can say, okay, maybe this is a closer to the mid-December Jets rather than the mid-February.
Yeah, absolutely. And see, I knew I could read your mind, Drew. I know you don't like getting out of my brain. But the thing is, and then you also want to do it against Seattle, and you want to do it against Vancouver, right? Because you don't want to have, have a loose defensive game, even if you've already, defeated the Avalanche and the Stars, right, guys? And
you might know. Sorry, Ezzy. You might know by by tomorrow afternoon, by, you know, 5 o'clock tomorrow. So the Avs and the Golden Knights play at 2:30 tomorrow. So you might know by 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock tomorrow, if Tuesday a win on Tuesday clinches you second place.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good point by you, Drew, because also we talked about this, right? Vegas is motivated because Vegas can catch LA. And I'm not sure. I mean, like, again, I was talking to Dave about this before we went live. Like, I don't think that the teams are necessarily, at least, I mean, I'm obviously not close to any NHL teams, right? I've called myself the NHL outsider.
Yeah.
But the reality is, you know, these teams are going to want to win as many games as they can. It's just that's the way they're wired. And I think, like, you could say, well, does Vegas want to play? Because right now, if the playoffs started today, it would be the Kings versus the Oilers in the first round. So if Vegas can pass LA, then you're playing the Oilers. So then, like, if you're Vegas, would you rather play Dallas or Edmonton? I'd rather play Edmonton.
Don't count Edmonton out for the top spot in the Pacific. Edmonton has 4 games left. They can get all the way up to 110 points if they win out. Somehow Edmonton, I tweeted this yesterday, that I don't know what the schedule maker did, but the schedule maker from Friday, so from yesterday through the end of the regular season on Thursday, the Oilers play 5 games. They play 5 games in, you know, in the 5-7 to end the regular season, which to me is an absolute insane schedule, including 2 sets of back-to-backs. So,
well, it's kind of a blessing and a curse, right, Drew? Because it gives you the games in hand, but then you have a very condensed schedule to end the season, right?
Right. That's a lot of hockey to be playing. I don't think you want to be playing that much hockey at this end of the year.
No.
You want a little bit. I think
they'll probably give McDavid a couple games off.
Well,
joking.
So later tonight, I think it's in, and if I'm not mistaken, I believe the game is in Edmonton. I'm going to double check on that right now. Later tonight,
it is. They're on after hours.
The game is in Edmonton. So later tonight, the Canucks and the Oilers play each other. And if the Oilers win, they move to 1 point behind the Canucks. They still have a game in hand. So it's not that Vancouver has clinched the Pacific Division by any stretch of the imagination. Edmonton can still, you know, go on a bit of a run here, and they probably are rueing that they left a point on the table yesterday against the Coyotes. And kudos to the Coyotes, by the way, for finding a way to both beat the Canucks and the Oilers the last 2 games in the midst of all the relocation talk, where it's clear they're not going to be there next year. But, you know,
Drew, I'm actually being told there's a last ditch arena deal that they're putting
playing
together
in a ditch is what's happening
in Chandler. I think Chandler, Arizona is now where they're focusing. So apparently I'm just hearing from my sources that the Coyotes actually might play in Arizona. No, it's obviously not happening. Yeah. Welcome Utah to the Central Division, by the way.
Well, we'll see about that. Yeah, there might be some realignment and things of that nature. I suspect they'll just make a straight swap, put Utah into the Central.
Drew, you guys know your American geography. Isn't Utah above Arizona?
It is certainly north of Arizona. It's not directly above.
North. But they border each other, don't they, Dave? Utah and Arizona?
Utah borders Colorado, doesn't it? Borders Nevada.
Utah borders Arizona, yes.
Yeah, you're right. It's Arizona. It's north.
Yeah.
It's one state north.
A lot of sense just to put them in, to keep them in the Central Division. I don't expect that anything's going to change on that front. It just doesn't.
And you guys should have known that. You guys were in Arizona and Nevada recently.
I've never been to Utah.
Look, guys, I'm just a poor prairie kid. Like, I can tell you where Flin Flon is on a map, but it's pretty good that I could tell you that Utah was north of Arizona.
I did almost go to Zion National Park in Utah once.
Nice. I do want to say thank you to Stan for this contribution of funds to the Illegal Curve Drinking Fund. Stan, appreciate that. Totally unnecessary, but we do appreciate the contribution to our well-being. I'll tell you what, I see Shawnee Reynolds is getting set to join us. So why don't we take a break, and when we come back, we'll keep the Jets talk going with Sean. We'll address the question that Stan asked as well throughout the course of the show. Wendell Clark is going to join us at the bottom of hour number 2. We got a lot going on a very exciting edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on this Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, the empty chair that briefly was Dave Manouk. Welcome you on this Saturday morning. Bottom of the hour, the Jets and the Avalanche coming up later on this afternoon, which means the Illegal Curve post-game show right around 5:40 p.m. And then, of course, after the Illegal Curve post-game show, Kenny and Rennie will do their version of the post-game show, and we're thrilled to welcome to the program Rennie himself, our good friend from Sportsnet, Sean Reynolds.
You can't stop a sneeze, Sean.
Yeah, I just did. So nice. I don't know what you're talking about.
Is that mauve? Are you wearing mauve? Is that violet? What color am I seeing there?
I mean, I'm a very primary guy. It's purple for me, but okay. If that makes it sound less, you know, effeminate, I'm okay like with that.
Sure. I'm comfortable
with whatever
color you're wearing, Sean. You're looking sexy.
I'll leave it up to the audience to decide what color they want me to be wearing.
Now,
there we go.
If I can take a guess, I mean, I think you're probably, if I hear the sniffles, I bet you you're thankful that this is a TSN game today and not a Sportsnet game, because you'd be playing hurt otherwise, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, no, I'm fine. I'm just, I just rolled out of bed. This was one of the days I finally got to sleep in. So I needed the wake up call. I just got it from you guys. Yeah.
Well, we appreciate that. Sean, obviously brought you on talk about the Jets. We're into the final weekend of the regular season. The Jets we saw on Thursday night against Dallas, way more of the Winnipeg Jets team that we saw earlier this year. We saw them in New York also, and then they went on the tailspin. So from your perspective, what did we see on Thursday? Did we see a changing of the Jets, stripes to back to what they were in December? Or did we see just another blip where they find it and then lose it again?
Yeah, I think it was the former. I wouldn't expect that. There's a lot more at stake here. It seems like this team's urgency is something that they play with a little bit, right? And the previous game against Nashville, I know they're on a 5-game winning streak, but I mean, you could play that game against Nashville 10 times over, and I would be surprised to see them come out on top. Nashville was clearly the better team in that game everywhere, but on the scoreboard. But I mean, it's always been since 2019. It's always been the question with this team. They've always been a deeply capable team, which is why people always get so excited about them, which is why analysts across the league whose job it is to tell you what is going to happen have always believed heavily. And there's always been, until I think recent years, analysts who pick the Winnipeg Jets to win the Stanley Cup year after year, because they're a deeply capable team that for some reason at times just decides they don't want to be capable or aren't invested in doing the things they need to do to be capable. So it's the fascinating thing about them. I've never heard a good explanation. I mean, I was batting around the idea that what we saw from the Jets the last two seasons was it earlier in the year they would get to the top of their game and the rest of the league was down here while they were up here. And then as the league starts catching up, their game falls off. But then you go see a game like you saw against the Dallas Stars, and you know that at this time of year, they're capable of being that team that they were at this time of year, being the same team that they were in December. And it's just what's maddening about them. I think for Jets fans, it's something that absolutely drives them crazy, because to your point, Drew, what we saw from them last night, they could continue doing that and they could carry that into the playoffs. And if they carry that game into the playoffs, they are going to be such a tough out. And maybe it can take them to the second round and maybe to the third round, maybe to the Stanley Cup final, because that's how good they are when they play that kind of game. And they could also turn around at any point and do what we did or do what we saw against the Nashville Predators, where they were just no-shows for two periods. Because even in that 5-game winning streak before that, there would be stretches of those games where that would happen. It wasn't that long before that. And I know they lost that game, but the Edmonton Oilers, they just gave the Edmonton Oilers the second period in complete and total domination. And they were even talking about it before they went on the road trip, that they're playing these games, but there's parts of the games where they're just allowing the other team to do whatever they want to do. So they can play a complete game. We know it. They can play it for a long stretch of hockey, because they did it for 30-plus games this year. Are they going to continue on like that? I feel like they've been building. I feel like they've kind of got the memo, and we're going to see them continue that tonight against the Colorado Avalanche and continue it into the playoffs. But if they all of a sudden came out and were a no-show for a good chunk of the game, who would be surprised?
Sean, I want to get right into the million-dollar question here because I caught a little bit of your post-game show. I obviously couldn't catch all of it because we also do our post-game show. Yeah. And I know you guys are posting the comments. Logan Stanley, a.k.a. the Stanberg pairing with Dylan Sandberg, now on that right side. If you would have asked me even as recently as a week ago, Sean, I think you might be on the same page as me. I would say there's no real front runner here. It's, you know, most likely going to be between Stanley and Nate Schmidt on that third pair. I don't know, you know, how many people would be taking Colin Miller just because he's only played four games since he was acquired at the trade deadline. But based on what you've seen now, right, we're sitting here, what is it, April 13th, guys? April 12th, yes. I forget.
April 13th.
There's only three games left. First round, Jets versus Avalanche. Is it going to be Logan Stanley on that left side with Dylan Sandberg on the right side for the third pair? Where are you at with this? Because I know you and Kenny have been discussing this on your post-game show.
So I don't want to sound like I'm ducking the question, and I don't think I will, but this is a really hard question to answer because before this, not too long ago, I think it would have been an obvious answer. It would have been Nate Schmidt because you would be taking the guy who's probably a little bit fleeter of foot to play against that team, and maybe that's still the answer. Because what we've seen in the past is we've seen scenarios that I think earlier this year, Logan Stanley was playing in a game and Nathan MacKinnon blew by him for a goal, right? And you know, you think of times where those level of players, you know, the time that Connor McDavid did the skate through four guys on the Jets and go and score that highlight reel goal. Well, Logan Stanley was one of the guys that he blows by. So I think that there's been a belief that Logan Stanley at the NHL level is not fleet of foot enough to handle those kind of players. And that's why this is a tough question, because what we've seen from Logan Stanley lately, we haven't, not from my recollection, seen him against one of those players, right? We haven't seen him against an Austin Matthews or an Nikita Kucherov or those like super elite level guys that can just like take that half step that you give them and turn it into like three steps past you, right? So, but what I will say is Logan Stanley as of late looks like all the things that have kept him out of the lineup, the weaknesses, the troubles transitioning to the NHL, he's starting to figure them out. He's starting to handle the pressure a lot better than he used to. He's starting to get his gaps a lot better against you know, NHL stars and that kind of speed. So what I've seen from Logan Stanley, I think for the longest time in this race for that sixth spot on defense, you've seen the things that make Logan Stanley stand out and then a lot of the things that keep him out of the lineup. What I've been seeing from him lately are the things that allow him to stand out, and then all the things that kept him out of the lineup, suddenly I'm not seeing those things anymore. So it really is a recent evolution to right. The point that I don't know how it will look heading into the playoffs. So I think tonight is actually, I would fully expect that you're going to see Logan Stanley in the lineup because Rick Bowness wants to get a hint at this answer. He wants to see what Logan Stanley looks like when he gets out on the ice against Nathan MacKinnon in a game where Colorado will have last change. And if he's exposed in this game, well, mm-hmm. Now you've got a little bit more information and probably you get Schmidt, who's going to start a little more, you know, at least at the start of the playoffs. So the best answer I could give is that tonight really matters in that, because there's still pieces of information the coaches need to gather to understand what they think their best plan will be going into the playoffs.
Sean, you know, you talk about the lineup, and Rick Bowness yesterday, when he was asked about the lineup from Kenny, he said that his plan was to keep the lineup the same. He said, but he will be dressing an extra forward and an extra defenseman. So they've got some bumps and bruises that they're dealing with. But ultimately, if he has his druthers, it is going to be the exact same lineup that we saw against the Dallas Stars.
Yeah.
So that would mean no Cole Perfetti again. So yeah. Unless, again, like I said, barring one of the forwards dealing with something and he maybe inserts Perfetti for that player. But I guess similar to Ezzy's question, I'm going to ask you to put your prognostication hat on, which is better than a Red Sox hat any day of the week. And I will say, do you think that this trend with Perfetti is going to continue? Do you think that if game one comes about, Cole Perfetti is watching it from the sidelines versus playing?
Oh, to me, I don't have a doubt in my mind, barring an injury in the top six. I personally think Gustafson kind of hammered home what the Jets are looking for, and especially like what will make them successful. Now, the Jets plan to shut other teams down to win a series against a team like the Colorado Avalanche will be, you need to have depth. You need to be able to grind. You're going to be able to need to grind Nathan MacKinnon with more than just one line. Now Lowry's line is going to go out and it's going to do a phenomenal job at that. And it's going to carry the vast majority of that. But in a series where regardless if they have home ice advantage, you got to play two, maybe three games in Colorado where they have last change, you don't want to be getting caught with that line out against a line that can't handle them. And I think their belief would be that the fourth line as it currently exists with Iafallo and Barron and Nemestnikov is less likely to get burnt by Nathan MacKinnon getting out on the ice against them than a line that included Cole Perfetti. It's my way of long and short saying, I don't think Cole Perfetti, for the most part, is going to be a consideration in the bottom six anymore. He's going to be a consideration as a black ace for the top six. And why a black ace? I know there was a lot of people out there who've been wanting to be, or who told you that Cole Perfetti, this was the year he was going to be their second line center. It was going to explode. He was going to have that coming, you know, to the NHL moment where he was a star on this team. So I know a lot of people want their biases confirmed in this situation. I don't think they're wrong about Cole Perfetti, that he's going to be a good player, but we're seeing a young player slowly adapt, and we've also seen Kevin Cheveldayoff go out and build the kind of depth to the playoffs that means that he's not one of the top six guys on this team anymore. So he essentially, in my mind, his role will be a black ace whose job will be to fill in the top six, because the bottom six is a different animal. It's not that he's not good enough to be a top 12 player, but the Winnipeg Jets have decided to make a team with two scoring lines and two lines that can grind you and play defense, and that does not fit the MO of what Cole Perfetti does. So he's waiting at this stage going forward. He is waiting for an opportunity should someone fall out of the top six by injury or whatever happens. And that, to me, will be his role with the Jets going into the playoffs.
Two forward lines that are scoring lines come playoff time, Sean Reynolds says.
Yes.
Sean, of course, joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, live on our YouTube channel, live on all of our social media platforms. Vilardi, Connor, and Scheifele back together on Thursday. You know, the Jets as a whole certainly played a very good game, defensively stifling, but again, Scheifele, Connor, and Vilardi were hemmed in, were negative possession players, were negative on the expected goals front.
Kenny's listening to this, by the way. Sorry.
I assume Kenny's listening to us at all times. But, you know,
I think actually Kenny's playing at Pinawa right now, Sean.
All right. The question, I mean, you can see where I'm going with this, Sean. Yes. Is it just that it's just not worth debating anymore because Rick Bowness is saying he's going with that. That's going to be his line, regardless of what the on ice analytics and the a lot of the eye test as well is showing.
Yeah. And if your team plays the way that they played that last game, it goes back to the theory behind the Rick Bowness system. That is, we don't need stars. Like, Colorado, when they play the Winnipeg Jets, if they're going to beat them, they're going to need Nathan MacKinnon to be an absolute superstar. And they're going to need Cale Makar to be an absolute super. Like, they will need those guys to play out of their mind to win playoff series, not just against the Jets, basically everyone going forward. The Winnipeg Jets, if they play like they did against Dallas, which is the way they played for, you know, a massive chunk of the season when they were having their greatest success, they don't need anyone to be a superstar. They just need everyone to buy into that system, play that system, and then you'll get goals chipped in here. Morgan Barron will get one every once in a while. And then Gustafson will come into the lineup and get a goal like he did last game. And it's the same thing that AJF did when he came into the lineup, right? And then you'll get one from Kyle Connor because he's dangerous and there's an open spot and he'll put it in the back of the net. And then, you know, Nick Ehlers will grab one, or Vilardi will do something special in front of the net on the power play. You don't need this like line that can like grossly outscore their opposition to make up for your flaws elsewhere. You need everyone to be solid. And then when the puck bounces your way, you need one guy to pounce on it. And it could be your 12th forward or it could be your first. And that'll happen once or twice during a game. And that will give you a very good shot. Just those two goals will give you a very good shot of winning that game. the game against Dallas was the perfect blueprint for that. So the Jets system is designed to not have to have the two scoring lines. They've wanted it all year. You've heard Rick Bonus. It's probably his biggest concern is trying to get two scoring lines going. It's what will make a team like Dallas, in my mind, a lot more difficult should the Jets get there than Colorado, because Colorado is so top heavy. But Dallas has one grinding line the way, well, actually they've got all four lines that can grind, just like the Jets, all four lines can grind. And then they've got a fourth line that I think is somewhat akin to the Jets' fourth line, but then they've got three lines that can actually score fairly consistently. So that balance hasn't worked out typically against the Jets this year, except for in that last game. But is there a reason for concern there? I most definitely think so, because they could be the great difference makers. Like if you are the Jets and you can play that game where all four lines look the same defensively, but then have Shifley and Velarde and Kyle Connor wake up to do the things that everyone knows they're capable of doing. I mean, that could be a game changer, but at this stage, they've run out of runway. The most important thing is to play the defensive game, the style that they did last game, and then hopefully some offense wakes up along the way. The one thing I'll say about that line, I agree with you, Drew, they were getting the worst of their matchups throughout that night, but it wasn't grossly worse. It wasn't like standout worse. And in the cases where they needed to defend, they defended extremely well. So to me, that's going to be enough for Rick Bonus, because even though, you know, the Ehlers project up there, we've seen it hit a higher note this season. There's clearly things going on there where certain players are more comfortable playing in certain situations. And at some point it looks to me like he has to manage that and say, okay, but if you're playing together, you have to give me this. I think that's what that last game was all about. I didn't even get to it on our post game, so I'll get to it here. That last game to me was Rick Bonus saying, okay, you guys all want to play here? Fine. But you better show me this defensive effort and the blueprint if you want to stay together. And they did that. So that was enough to get all the players to stay where a lot of them want to stay.
And I'm glad that you mentioned number 27, a.k.a. Fly, because, I mean, we're not going to go over the, you know, is Ehlers going to play on the first line? Because I think you'd agree, Sean, especially with the 3-0 victory and how they played. Connor Shifley, Velarde, that's sticking together probably for the last three games of the season and going into the playoffs. And Ehlers, Toffoli, and Monahan were excellent, arguably their best game as a unit together. And I wanted to ask you about Ehlers specifically going into the playoffs. Like, to me, there's no other player that wants to prove himself more than Ehlers in the playoffs based on the injury last year and based on the fact that, you know, he's had struggles producing offense. I mean, you go back, you know, years ago, going back to the series against the St. Louis Blues, where, you know, he didn't have a great playoff series. Like, to me, he is kind of that. I know some people don't like this talk, but to me, he's kind of like the X factor. Like, obviously, the big boys, Shifley, Connor, Velarde on that top line, they've got to be good. I mean, you have high expectations for Monahan and Toffoli. These are guys that have proven themselves for years in the playoffs. But I think you'd agree that, you know, Ehlers, there's been, you know, more to be desired from him offensively over the years. And then you couple that with what I mentioned, the fact that he was injured in the series against Vegas. And you can't tell me that series wouldn't have gone longer if Ehlers was in the lineup.
Well, I agree with you 1,000% that he would be the X factor for this team going into the playoffs. And it's because of this system that we're talking about, right? So the suffocating system, if the Jets get to that, that's what they want to look like. In my opinion, it's what they need to look like to have success. But I agree he's the X factor in this system. And I think there's really, really good examples of why. Now, last game, he works well within the system. That a lot of people would say that's the kind of guy who doesn't work in that system, but he actually works really well in it because he's so fast. And when he applies it to the back check, he creates the back pressure and did so in that last game on numerous cases. That is so important to making that system work. The back pressure, being able to kind of trap guys as you get back and crush them towards the defenseman and forcing them up ice, and then the defenders slow down. It kind of, that's what the back pressure is, what allows the Jets to create scenarios where opposition teams have to shoot from distance against their goaltenders. And I don't have X's and O's, so I'm going to abandon that, but I'm just saying he's a fast guy, so he can do the back pressure thing really well. But who on this team is more capable of those solo one-man band go through everybody goals that we've seen from him this year, that we saw during that 30-game stretch of hockey that they're talking about, where he goes and scores like overtime goals, or that goal that he scored late against the Chicago Blackhawks, I think it was in January, where right at the end of the game, boom, pull a rabbit out of the hat, the Jets win a game. Because in the entire time this game is going on, the Jets slow it down and they make it this grind, and teams just get used to that slow plodding style. At one crucial moment of the game where one goal can make a difference, all of a sudden, Nick Ehlers can get the puck at speed and blow through everybody. And all of a sudden, it's this like speed burst out of nowhere that no one's expecting. And then he gets into a spot to shoot and he's got a great shot, and boom, it's in the back of the net. And those are the kind of goals that you can score in this system that we're talking about, that one or two goals can make a difference. He's the kind of guy, more so than Scheifele, more so than Kyle Connor, that can be the one-man band who just picks up the puck at one moment and does it all by himself and scores. So I think you're 100% right in him being the X factor. As far as him fitting in with those players, like I honestly give Sean Monahan all the credit for that. Yeah. Sean Monahan, I think, is a super, super smart hockey player who, you know, we've heard this in the past. I don't know how many players we've seen say it out loud, but we've heard the theory numerous times that Nick Ehlers can be hard to play with because other players don't know what to expect from him. That speed angle and that burst being part of that. Sean Monahan strikes me as a guy who's just really good at rolling with the punches and allowing other players around him. You do what makes you special, and I'll adapt to it because I'm smart enough to be able to adapt to it.
Like a chameleon, right, Sean?
Totally, totally. He can just fit in, blend in with whatever you need him to be on that line. One way he did that, if we're looking for specific examples, Nick Ehlers has been a guy, think of this all the time because Jets fans will have seen this thousands of times, him getting the puck and doing that thing where he skates around the zone and he's faster than everybody else and he just goes all the way around, and every once in a while what he'll do is he'll get back to the top of the blue ice and he'll just turn and shoot the puck on net, right? And sometimes he'll catch the goalie, but usually it's just a play where he's throwing the puck to the net and quite often doesn't turn into a lot. Except all of a sudden, Sean Monahan figured out that he does that and goes into the high slot and then gets a tip on that, and suddenly it's in the back of the net. That's Sean Monahan reading off of a very unique play that Nick Ehlers does that not a lot of players do in the league, or not a lot can, because they don't have that kind of speed, and him being like, I know how I can help with this. So he's been really good for him. He's been a really good fit. I know that there's a lot of people out there and in the analytics world that are driven crazy by the Scheifele and Connor pairing, and they want Ehlers there just for the fact that when it was Ehlers, Vilardi, Scheifele, and Vilardi, that they really, really popped at one time in the season. And a lot of people believe it's a better fit, and the numbers tell us that's the case. It doesn't also mean, though, that Nick Ehlers with Sean Monahan hasn't been a really, really good pairing, and maybe an example of an NHL player in Sean Monahan figuring out Nikolaj Ehlers better than almost any player he's played with in his career.
Well, Sean,
that was an incredible speech. Hang on. I just want to say before Dave answers this question.
I feel like we should be clapping, Sean. I honestly feel who needs way. Kenny? We just took a trip to the buffet.
Good. That's the kind of feedback I want. Anything that like puts me ahead of Kenny is exactly what I'm looking for. Yeah.
Sean, the only thing is Drew might have to get his buffet is closed sign, which we usually have when Ken is on. He might have to have that for you. So,
you have it there, Drew?
I think I'll let you go to the.
I thought I have it somewhere. I'd have to look for it.
But, the question I have for you is, you're only as strong as your weakest link, as they often say. And the one link right now defensively that seems to be the focus of most people who analyze or watch the Jets is Neil Pionk. Yeah. And we know that he's been a bit of a chaos agent this season. He's down about a minute in terms of average ice time. But I guess the question is, are the Jets going to go as far as Neil Pionk can take them, in the sense that he plays a lot of minutes, and because of the way he's played this year, it's been pretty inconsistent, and that's not necessarily something you want when you're trying to find consistency going into the playoffs.
Well, I think what Rick Bowness thinks is that, okay, a lot of players, as they've kind of fallen away from their system since Christmas time and got a little bit loose, There's been a lot of that. This system is not supposed to be chaos. It's supposed to be extremely controlled and look the same. Like, it's the whole idea of chaos is the opposite of having four lines that look exactly the same, unless your team is just a garbage fire, right? And everything's going wrong. If they all look the same, that's a way of saying everyone is supposed to look very structured. And so I think the Jets have got away from that structure. And because of that, it's made them look different defensively. And I think Neil Pionk is one of the players that, as they've gotten away from that structure, has shown the way that you were just saying. He stood out a lot of times for the wrong reasons. I think that there's not a worry in the coaching staff about Neil Pionk, because if the team can get back to the structure we saw against Dallas last game and make that consistent, then it's, you know, I don't want to say it's like a dumbed down thing, but it's a lot more paint by numbers for the Jets. This is the things that we do to succeed, and you don't have to go outside of yourself. And so I'd said this early, and a game really stands out to me, that game that they lost to when they went on the 6-game losing streak. And they lost to Washington. The third period, it was two really good periods, but they found themselves down. And then they abandoned their structure in the third, and it turned into everyone on the team getting the puck and trying to skate through the entire Washington Capitals team, turning the puck over the blue line and going the other way. Neil Pionk, to me, is a guy that when you get that kind of desperate feeling that nothing's working, and hockey players do because they're passionate, because they want to help their team, or like, I can help, I'm just going to go and I'm going to do something special. But when you're trying to do something special, you're typically going out of the system trying to do something. And a guy like Josh Morrissey's able to do that and do it really well and not get caught. I think Neil Pionk isn't. He's a guy who, when he goes and he does that, he gets caught. Puck ends up getting turned over. He's out of position. And now all of a sudden you're in trouble. So I think the coaches think that what ails Neil Pionk will be solved simply by just getting back to the blueprint. And I also think their belief of how he competes, you know, Neil Pionk is one of those guys I've always thought to myself, I would hate playing against that guy, because he always gives you that little forearm shiv when you're not looking. He does all the little things very quietly, very subtly, from a guy that's not the size of a guy you'd expect to do that, that piss the other team off and take them off their game. So I think the Jets coaching staff really likes those things about it, likes how he is when he's fallen within the system. And they think that he's a player that can be solved by the structure, as long as the Jets can consistently get back to the structure.
Sean, last one for you, at least unless, as he jumps in with another one. The Avalanche power play, fifth best in the league. The Jets penalty kill, bottom 10 in the league. How big of a factor do you expect that to be come the first game of the playoffs, come that first round series? We have a strength for one team, a weakness for another. Yes, it's a new season. Yes, you start fresh, but can the Jets find a penalty kill to shut down the dangerous Avs power play, from your estimation?
Well, I feel like they've found it lately, and it's funny because I've tried to describe this to other analysts who come into town when we're doing hockey night games or Monday or Wednesday games or whatever, and I've always said about the Jets power play this year is it really works until that moment it doesn't, and then it's in the back of your net, right? And the reason that is that because the mindset that the Jets take into 5-on-5 hockey, which has made them, you know, arguably the best 5-on-5 team in the NHL this year, is just complete total pressure at all points. You never get breathing space on the ice. And they try to do that on the penalty kill. And when they do it, they actually look like they're like, it's so often when you watch the Jets penalty kill, the opposition, even when they have it in the Jets zone, they're never getting the puck, dusting it off, looking around, where am I going to move it next? Oh, I'm going to fake like I'm moving it that way, and I'm going to move it that way. They don't have time because Mason Appleton or Adam Lowry or Alex Iafallo are right in your face, forcing a decision at all times. So the Jets want to take away time and space when they do that. The problem on the power play is because you've got that extra man, at some point there's going to be someone who's wide open. The Jets just think for the most part that if they get their passing lane coverage right, that they can deny that pass, force turnovers, get it down, and then do what we've seen in the last couple of games where they make it really hard. They deny the puck before it gets back into the zone. The last couple of games have been exactly what the Jets want to look like on the penalty kill. It's just a razor's edge being on the right side of the razor's edge with that pressure and getting everything right. Because the moment you get it wrong, it's quite often ending up back in the back of the Jets net. So what I've seen from a team that has not backed down from that all season, that's, they're going to live by that sword. They're going to die by that sword. So it could go great. I think it's been going great the last little while. I think, like a lot of things, the Jets are finding their form right at the 11th hour. But no doubt, that is a team that has the capability to make you pay on that power play. And they generate more power plays than anybody else because of the speed that they play with. So it can most definitely be a deciding factor. But I will say this. I think the Jets' advantage in this series is the depth that they have. I think that Colorado was very top heavy. I think they lost out in the playoffs last year to the Seattle Kraken because the Seattle Kraken played the depth game and won out in seven games. I think that pathway is there. I think it's obvious for the Jets. I think the Colorado Avalanche's strength at the top of their lineup is way up here, but then their weaknesses are way down here. So if this is the Jets' weakness, the biggest weakness for Colorado to exploit in this series, I think Colorado's biggest weakness is far bigger, far wider, and far more capable of the Jets to exploit in that playoff series.
And Sean, I did have one more question.
I knew he would.
I'm okay with it. I don't know what Drew's problem is.
But it's not hockey related. Who do you have winning the Masters? Bryson DeChambeau, Scottie Scheffler, somebody else? I mean, are you following it? I just want to get Rennie's take. Yeah, Tiger. Like, what are you looking forward to the last two rounds of the Masters?
Well, I don't think DeChambeau will win it. I actually don't think it's any either of the top two guys. I'll be honest, when it comes to, you know how they talked about like a basketball game and a lot of people who criticize basketball, you know, every sport has their people who criticize it. And the criticism of basketball is that you don't need to tune into until the last 5 minutes for the game. Everything before that doesn't matter. And then it's all about the last 5 minutes. When it comes to golf, I'm usually like a Sunday guy. That's when I start paying attention to it.
Too. So, honestly, I mean, I took Scottie Scheffler in my $10 office pool. So I feel like
Ezzy's $10. Yeah, where'd you get $10 from?
Naomi gave it to me. Actually, no, I stole it out of her purse. But so I'm going for Scottie Scheffler. Also, I took Shane Lowry just because he has the same last name as Adam Lowry, and I'm there a quarter Irish. So I took Shane Lowry. But aside from that, yeah, I'm with you, Sean. I watched the last round, but I mean, I like it. It's very close, right? There's a lot of guys within striking distance of DeChambeau and Scheffler.
I mean, I tuned in a little bit yesterday. So, you know, I'm watching what's going on, but at the same time, I try, I often fail. Some would say I most often fail to give good analysis with hockey, which I pay attention to, but at least I'm trying to do it having consumed tons of hockey and watching things and noticing. So if I gave you anything on the Masters, it would be just like a complete and total guess, and you could get as much analysis by walking out your front door and yelling at the first person walking by on the street. So I'm not even gonna bother, guys.
There you go.
Well, Sean, Drew does the same thing. Drew pretends like he knows what he's talking about, but he really doesn't know what he's talking about when it comes to golf.
I don't pretend to know what I'm talking about when it comes to golf anymore. Maybe, you know, maybe a few years back, but I can assure you that the only part that I'll be tuning in, I mean, I'll tune in on Sunday afternoon, potentially while taking a midday nap if I can get my hands on one of those. Nap, but I just want to see the fact that Tiger made the cut again while he has a fused ankle is such an unbelievable feat that
that's his course. I mean, that literally, he knows that course like the back of his hand, right? Like that is Tiger's course. Right, Drew. I mean, the fact that he makes the cut with all of his injury history. I mean, Sean, the reality is, the reason why I asked you about the Masters is I still have my fingers crossed that I'm still going to get on that Granite Hills golf course with you and Sean and maybe someone else in the media, maybe
Mike. Jay Bell.
Right, I mean, Jay Bell did invite me to his cottage last year and I wasn't able to go. So I'm not necessarily in Jay Bell's good books. You know me, I like to kind of stick around Tall Timber Road. I don't like to go too far, right?
You're but, a true Lactobani person, like your house. Born and raised in Lactobani, worst thing that could ever happen. Yeah,
I'm going to mute Ezzy so he stops talking about whatever nonsense he's talking about. And I'm going to say to Sean, thank you for this morning. Always appreciate your insight and your analysis. You and Kenny coming up a little bit later on this evening, talking about the Jets and the Avalanche. We're looking forward to it, and I'm sure you're going to be racking up some frequent flyer miles starting with the end of the regular season and the first round of the playoffs.
You and Colin Jensen, right, Sean?
Colin won't be on the road, but I'll have the Ottawa camera guy on the road with me, Dan, who's a great guy. Right. And, you know, I could use a break from Colin, let's be honest.
Yeah, totally understand that.
82 games, it's a long season.
It's a lot of Colin, there's no question about it. Sean, thank you, buddy. Have a great Saturday.
Thanks for having me on, guys. And Ezzy, thanks for staying patient and sticking with me the last couple of weeks when I couldn't make it work.
Well, no, I mean, nobody gets more excited when you come on, Sean. And I know you're a busy guy traveling and everything like that with kids. And I mentioned on the postgame show, you saw me with my kids with the scooters around River Heights. So it's confirmed that I actually am a functional member of society, and I'm a dad. So
you looked like a stressed out dad poster is what you looked like. I passed you on the street and I was like, that guy's in the middle of it. I'm not even gonna yell out the window and say hi, because that would be too much distraction for where he's at right now.
One of these days, Ezzy's going to master that scooter also. So hey, fingers crossed on that. Sean, thanks, buddy. We'll do it again real soon. Be well.
Yeah, great to see you.
Sean Reynolds this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Keeping Winnipeg laughing for over 30 years. Rumors, Canada's longest-running comedy club. Bringing you the biggest laughs from the best comedians on the planet. Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Dennis Miller, Brad Garrett, the greats, and all the up-and-comers too. When was the last time you laughed out loud? Make it a great night out with friends, or book your office or birthday party. Even a fundraising event at Rumors. Get all the details and dates on upcoming shows at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Whoa, Ezzy, everything okay? You look stressed.
Of course I'm stressed. We're moving, the house is upside down, the kids failed miserably at packing the fine china, and my life is in chaos. Chaos!
Yes, that does sound like a problem.
What am I going to do?
Ezzy, relax. Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage is the answer. With 60 years of experience in moving Manitobans and a track record of exemplary customer service, one call to Rolly's and your stress is gone. No job is too big or too small. Just visit Rollies.com and they will take it from there.
Thanks, Dave. And thank you, Rollies Transfer Moving and Storage, online at Rollies.com.
Hey, Drew.
Ezzy, whoa, what a smile.
Yeah, I got my crowns done at Linden Market Dental Center, and they whitened my teeth.
I see.
They're so bright that every time I smile, they go,
we have hockey tonight. Do you have a mouth guard to protect those pearly whites?
I sure do.
Whoa, they even ting through the mouth guard.
Linden Market Dental Center covers all your dental needs, from restorative to cosmetic dentistry, and will fit you with a sports guard for that active lifestyle. 877 Waverly, see lindenmarketdental.com.
Boston Pizza harnessed Fanalytics to test if the game is better at home or at Boston Pizza. The results are irrefutable. Catch the game at Boston Pizza, powered by Fanalytics.
We did it again!
You're on fire, man.
There's power in a handshake. After a great game or great deal, it shows professionalism and respect. Two qualities Zappia Group Realty take pride in. You don't build a business where 95% of your clients are referred by others without honesty, integrity, and total dedication to client satisfaction. To sell your home for more in less time, shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty. Get started at zappiagroup.com.
That's a different vantage point I was not expecting there. Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now, a little bit later than the second hour officially begins, but that's okay. We went long with Sean because we always enjoy getting together with Mr. Reynolds to talk about what's going on with the Winnipeg Jets. Coming in up in about 20 minutes time, Wendell Clark is going to join the show. Wendell Clark, of course, will be one of the featured speakers at the upcoming 50th annual Rady JCC Sports Dinner. Wendell Clark, Doug Gilmore, Grant Fuhr, all coming to Winnipeg on May the 28th. We will be there as well. We want you to be there too. Get your tickets at radyjcc.com. If you buy a ticket, be sure to mention you want to sit with the Illegal Curve guys. We have our table, so come join us at our table. We'll have merriment. We'll have fun. We'll have some drinks. We'll have some libations. We'll talk about memorabilia. Everything under the sun. Come join us May 28th at the Rady JCC Sports Dinner, and stay tuned for Wendell Clark coming up in about 20 minutes.
Yeah, super pumped up about Wendell Clark. I mean, I'm sure the series between the Leafs and the Kings is going to come up in 1993. I mean, Wendell Clark, nothing has really changed, right, guys? Like, he is still one of the most popular Leafs of all time. Got to give a shout out to my brother-in-law, Jill. He's a huge Leafs fan. I texted him that we're going to have Wendell on. I mean, and you forget, right? Like, I was going back and looking at his stats. He was a member of the Leafs on three separate occasions, right? He played for other teams, the Nordiques, the Islanders. I might be forgetting a team in there. Did he play for the Lightning?
He did, the Lightning, the Red Wings, then the Blackhawks.
Yeah, so he played for, what is that, half a dozen, seven teams there, Drew? Yeah. So I'm super pumped. You know, nothing has changed. You know, I'm 41 years old. We're all in our 40s at this point. Well, I mean, Drew recently turned 50, but Dave and I are in our 40s. But, you know, nothing's changed. I mean, the way he played hockey... right, because he was obviously a guy who dropped the gloves, and his penalty minutes were always up there, right? But I mean, I'm just so excited because there's so much to talk to him about.
He 271 minutes in penalties in 86-87. Yeah. It was a different game back then.
Well, and who can forget, right, that fight with Marty McSorley in the Western Conference Final between the Leafs and the Kings, right? You could have almost had a Leafs Habs Stanley Cup Final in 1993, but obviously it wasn't meant to be. And we can thank that series for the name of this show, right, boys?
Yeah, absolutely. That
93. I thank Marty McSorley personally when we when he was here for the Celebrity Human Race or whatever it was called with the HSC, and I talked to him about it.
Weren't you driving around in a car with him or something?
Was he on our team? No, I had Mike Krushelnitsky on our team.
Oh, Mike Krushelnitsky. Okay.
Weren't you on the team with the, I forget her name. She was in, show called? Modern Family. She was Happy Gilmore's girlfriend, Julie Benz or something. What was the name?
Oh,
remember what I'm talking about, Dave?
Yeah, I don't think that wasn't the same girl that I was on the thing.
Oh, that's with. A different person entirely. Never
Dave's
mind.
Had so many different ladies in his life. It's hard for him to keep track of all the different.
But I will say that, no, actually the best one, the best celebrity that we had was, what's his name? Was Jay Peterman.
Like from Seinfeld.
Yeah, he was on. And then he did like a little Jay Peterman bit, which is quite funny.
There you go. That must have made your day. In any event, let's get back to talking.
Yeah, just Wikipedia it, Dave. Julie Benz from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Wasn't she on your team? I remember you talking about her.
Yeah, but I don't think she was in Happy Gilmore, was she?
No, I got the wrong. They're both blonde.
So you said Happy Gilmore. I'm like, I don't
they're
think
both blonde women.
Good job, Ezzy. As per usual, you're bringing your A game to this program on a regular basis. The Jets and the Avalanche coming up later on this afternoon. Of course, we'll have the Illegal Curve post-game show right around 5:40, 5:45, talking about everything that goes on. A big game, we mentioned it. You know, Cole Perfetti, you know, he had the highs of, you really just, you know, it was last week, maybe 10 days ago, he was flying high when he was back in the, as a member of the Winnipeg Jets.
Three-point game.
Performing so well, and now back to being in the press box. Is it just a function right now of the Jets and their impressive forward depth is just sort of blocking a young player who otherwise would be in the lineup? Is it just that sort of the veteran experience, the veteran skill set that Tyler Toffoli and Sean Monahan have brought to this team have just rendered his ideal spot just they've blocked him from it right now?
Yeah, I guess you could use the word block, Drew, if you want. Like, I think, you know, when as soon as Tyler Toffoli was acquired from the New Jersey Devils. At that point, if you remember, Cole Perfetti was not in the lineup at all, right? Like, he was a healthy scratch at that point. So you did not bring in, I realized Toffoli guys spent a little bit of time with Lowry and Appleton on the third line, but you did not bring Toffoli in here to play on the third line. I'm sorry. I'm not saying that Toffoli can't be effective on the third line, but this is a 30 goal scorer, guys. This is a Stanley Cup champion. This is a guy who has fit in really nice with Monahan and Ehlers on that second line. So I think it goes back to what we were talking to Sean about, right? Like, do you want, in theory, David Gustafson or Cole Perfetti on the fourth line if the opportunity presents itself? Because right now, guys, we talked about this on the last post-game show, Dave and I. It's hard to remember. I'm doing all the shows, and it's just really you and you guys deciding which show you want to do. But
that's exactly right.
Right now, with when Nito,
as he obviously, by the way, as he hasn't paid attention to the March schedule when I did every single game in March, and yeah, he was nowhere.
And
to
also going in person to every single Jets and Moose game. So obviously, you know, I'm not telling the truth here, but I mean, when Nino Niederreiter comes back, and we should mention, right, for those who are tuning in now and who weren't tuning in for the first hour of the show, Niederreiter, Dave reported this on illegalcurve.com yesterday. Niederreiter will not play this afternoon against Colorado. He's eligible to play and could play against Seattle. And Vancouver. But for now, the lineup's going to stay the same, right? You're going to have Gus Bus on that third line. You're going to have Namestnikov, Barron, and Iafallo on the fourth line. So right now, when Niederreiter is back, you're looking at, in my opinion, if we're just doing 13, 14, 15 rankings of the forwards, I've got Gus Bus 13, Perfetti 14. And unless there's a couple injuries, I don't think Rasmus Kupari is going to get into the lineup for the Jets, no, right? Like, he hasn't played in a while. He's been a regular healthy scratch now for what, 3 or 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. So getting back to your question, Drew, yeah, it's a function of forward depth and the fact that Toffoli has been excellent on the second line. And, you know, right now, I mean, that Barron, Namestnikov, Iafallo line, I think there's no reason to think that that line's going to be broken up. Like, we know that Nino is most likely going to go on that third line because that's been the line, Lowry, Appleton, Niederreiter. So, yeah, I mean, look, Cole Perfetti has a very bright future. I think, you know, if you're asking me what his ceiling is at the NHL level, I still think, Dave, he's a 70 to 80 point player. That's the ceiling for Cole Perfetti. I think he's that good. But I think right now it's going to be tough. Unless there's injuries, Drew, I just don't see Perfetti starting game one versus the Avalanche.
I think this is a great comment from C-Mac, Dave, and I want you to get in here in a second. But I think this is a great comment. C-Mac says Cole Perfetti is the seventh forward in the top six.
Absolutely.
And David Gustafson is the seventh forward in the bottom six. And I think that makes a lot of sense.
Well, and that's exactly what I was going to say in response to
C-Mac Ezzie's. Is a genius.
No, but I was going to say that in response to Ezzie's question, commentary right there was the fact that, listen, like, it's all situational. David Gustafson and Cole Perfetti are not the same player. So David Gustafson, if you have an injury or a need in your top six, is not the ideal guy who's going to go into that spot. Cole Perfetti is. You're not going to also look at Cole Perfetti and say, you know what, if I would need to replace Alex Iafallo or Morgan Barron, Cole Perfetti is that guy. No, David Gustafson is that guy. So yes, it is obviously, like, we can get hung up on this guy's 13, this guy's 14. But as C-Mac just perfectly put it.
I'm hung up, Dave.
Well, then hang up on your mic right now.
No, but you know what I mean, Dave? I'm just saying, like,
let Dave finish his point. Gustafson
was a healthy scratch, and then he comes back in. What does he do? He scores a goal and he plays really well in, you know, whatever, 14, 15 minutes of ice time. So continue on, Dave. But I think right now, as far as I'm concerned, Gustafson does have the edge over Perfetti for that 13th forward spot.
Yeah. And again, so to me, it's just a function of what you want in a player. And so, like, and it, like, at the end of the day, Cole Perfetti is 22 years old. This is not a player who you're losing time for. He's only going to get better this summer. He's only going to get stronger. He's only going to hopefully get faster. He's going to work on the things. I mean, again, the cerebralness with which he plays the game, you can't improve on that. That's already there. The fact is that there's the physical attributes that he possesses or doesn't possess at this point that he's going to work on this summer and you hope will improve. So for me, it's not like you're walking, as Drew said, you're not walking away from this from a 22-year-old first-round pick who's scored, 15, 16 goals this season. He's been good. The fact of the matter is that for right now, when you augment your top six with Sean Monahan, Tyler Toffoli, you've got that top six mix the way you like it, as the way the coaching staff likes it. You've got the bottom six mix the way you like it. That's the way it's going to be. And like I said, if opportunity presents itself or an injury happens, then you'll see Cole Perfetti. But yeah, I don't expect that you'll see him in game one, again, barring any sort of injuries. But ultimately, again, it's not necessarily a bad thing. And that's the curiosity thing in terms of this Jets team. I had someone ask me if I think that there's going to be any sort of black ace recalls. And I don't know about you boys, but I don't see the need, right? Like, what would be the reason to bring up guys from the Moose, A, who are playing right
in
now
a playoff spot.
In a playoff spot, and you're just going to throw off their chemistry?
Well, I'll say this much, though, Dave. If Drew mentioned this, right, the Avalanche play, obviously, the Jets today, and then who do they play tomorrow, Boston?
No, Vegas.
Sorry, Vegas. If the Jets clinch second place, if you want to call it that, and then the last two games are meaningless, do you throw maybe Brad Lambert or Jeff Malott a bone and give them a game with the Jets? I don't know. You would know better than I would, Dave. But if those last two games have playoff implications, then absolutely not. All I'm saying is the season Jeff Malott and Brad Lambert have had,
Yeah.
I don't know. Is that not an option for, you know, game 81 and 82 if they don't matter?
Well, it's interesting because the games, and I'm not going to do a Manuk Moose minute here, but the games matter for the Moose, because if the Moose potentially could clinch,
that's a good point.
The Moose could actually clinch a playoff spot tonight. Today, they can't do it with the win, but if Chicago loses tonight, the Moose, I think, clinch a playoff spot. So they'd be clinched. But ultimately, Texas actually lost to San Jose, who's a terrible team yesterday in regulation.
They're terrible at the NHL and AHL levels.
Yeah. So the Moose now are like within striking distance of a Texas. They have two games in hand on Texas, and they end the season in Texas, as he. So I agree with you in they would be something to recall Brad Lambert and give him, you know, an 82nd game. But the truth is, maybe you throw Rasmus Kupari in. You want to keep
Kupari in. You put Perfetti in. You put Gustafson back in. Those guys get the games.
That to me is
Colin Miller in. Those guys
get the games. That's what I'm saying.
81 and 82 don't matter.
I want to see Big Bad Brad.
But that's what I mean. Like, so that was the question that was posed to me. And I said, like, quite honestly, I don't know why you'd recall anyone. You've got Schmidt and Miller as your extra D right now. And you've got Perfetti and Kupari as your extra forwards. Why do you need to bring up more forwards and defensemen when they're playing with the Moose right now?
I think it was more so just to reward them. But again, maybe I'm completely off there, Dave.
But I promise
you're the Moose insider. I just think it would be nice if, especially like a guy like Jeff Mellott, right? Like you've been following.
Yeah,
sorry, Dave was just going to say, I think you're right. I think Kupari hasn't played in a while. Look, I think I'm agreeing with you guys. I just, maybe there's a little bit of a, I don't know, an optimist in me that thought maybe, you know, some of these Moose guys, but you're right. I mean, the Moose are still trying to get as high of a seed as they can, Dave.
Yeah.
So I'm sure Mark Morrison would love to have his two best offensive players in the lineup, right?
If games 81 and 82 don't matter for the Jets, and it's possible that they might not, depending on tonight's result. And again, like I said, folks, if the Jets win today to move 2 points ahead of Vegas, and then Vegas loses tomorrow as
you
well.
Ahead of Colorado. They have to win clean. They need a clean win, though, Drew, for that scenario.
If the Jets get a regulation win against Colorado today, and then Colorado loses to Vegas tomorrow, the Jets have clinched second that quickly. It's done. So games 81 and 82, even because, you know, the Jets have the tiebreaker, as I mentioned, games 81 and 82 for the Jets won't matter. So you'll see all the guys who haven't been in the lineup get back in the lineup, and those games will be proverbial exhibition contests. They will be no hitters as no hitters can be. No one is going to be going digging especially hard in the corners or anything along those lines. Those games will be you know, very lackadaisical for both teams, because likely game 82, I mean, we know game 81 against Seattle won't matter for the Kraken because they're out of the playoffs, and game 82 for Vancouver on Thursday likely
it can mean something for them.
It could mean something for the Canucks. Yeah. But if it doesn't matter for the Jets, it's not like the Jets are going to go all out and risk any sort of injury or anything.
I guess what I'm ultimately saying, though, is that I understand the mentality, and I think normally you'd say, sure, give a guy like Brad Lambert a shot at playing in the NHL. But ultimately, right now, him playing it with the Moose as the man on that, you know, what I call the top line with the Moose alongside Jeff Mellott, I just think it's more important for him to play those big minutes and to help, as he said, the Moose potentially lock up home ice if they can by getting the fourth spot. So we'll see what happens there. And to answer the question, ZTM and others have asked, Colby Barlow not playing today. There's a chance, again, like I said, in that scenario, if they defeat Iowa and Chicago loses, then the Moose will have clinched. And tomorrow being Fan Appreciation Day, there could be some real appreciation if you get to see the 2023 first rounder. You might not recognize him, shaved his beard, but he may be in the lineup. And if he's not, as Coach Mark Morrison told me during the week, you will see him in the lineup. You'll just have to have AHL TV because you'll probably see him in Milwaukee on Wednesday or next weekend in Texas.
Well, there you go. So, the Moose, their focus, of course, is driving to the playoffs, much like it is for the Winnipeg Jets.
I think they'll take a plane probably, actually, Drew.
Yeah, thank you, Ezra. That's very clever. You know, we asked the question to Sean, and the Neil Pionk conundrum. Mm-hmm. Is, I think, a big one hanging over this Winnipeg Jets team. He's playing in a role that's higher than he should be playing at this point, largely because the Jets are limited with their other options. I mean, it just seems to be the case that they're not really willing to consider moving Pionk down in the lineup. They're not willing to consider anything other than what has been status quo, really, for the last, you know, this whole season and probably going back to last year as well. For the playoffs, and you asked the question, I think it was you, Dave, or if I'm not mistaken, is getting him to at least a baseline of, let's just say, not chaos essential for the Jets and their potential success come the start of the Stanley Cup playoffs?
Oh, I mean, I can't see how that's why I said you're only as strong as your weakest link. And right now, for me, Ezzy, that's Neil Pionk, that's right?
Oh, sorry.
Well, and on this show, it's true. But for the Jets D core right now, I mean, it's not.
I just Dylan can't Gallo. Help myself. Sorry, it's a sickness. I'm a sick person, Drew. I can't help myself.
I stopped listening to you again.
It's not Dylan DeMello. It's not Josh Morrissey. It's not Brendan Dillon. It's not Dylan Sandberg. It's not even Logan Stanley. It's Neil Pionk. So you need a guy. Look, if you're going to reduce his minutes and play him 14 minutes, then we're having a different conversation. But right now, this team doesn't have that guy. Unless they want to pair up Brendan Dillon and Dylan Sandberg, Ezzy, that'd be a pretty big solid pairing in the second pair.
Well, let me stop you right there, Dave. Stop you right there, because that's where I was going to go. If you're moving Sandberg to the right side,
mm-hmm.
Well, he's already been moved.
Right. So they've moved him to the right side to play with Logan Stanley. Why not move him up to play him with Brendan Dillon?
I agree.
And look, I don't think Pionk and Stanley that's a dangerous combination. But at the same time, I wonder if there's, you know, if maybe the elevation of Sandberg with Dillon helps out enough that it sort of is a plausible option for the Winnipeg Jets. I can see backstage that Wendell Clark is here and ready to join us. So why don't we do this quickly? We'll go to break. We'll bring in Wendell Clark. He's going to join us to talk about his career, the upcoming Rady JCC dinner, things of that nature. And then, of course, more Jets talk still to come on this Saturday morning. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg, and Wendell Clark up next here on the program. Don't go anywhere. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Bottom of hour number two. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Dave Manuk, with Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Pleased to welcome to the program, I believe he's ready to join us, Wendell Clark is going to join us. His appearance on the show is presented by Jackson Events, a full-service events management firm that specializes in celebrity activations. Once again, Jackson Events is a proud supporter of the Rady JCC dinner, alongside with Doug Gilmore and Grant Fuhr. They're going to be on stage with our next guest, Wendell Clark, who is now just a black screen. So we're going to get Wendell up here and running momentarily. And as soon as I see, I'm going to remove Wendell from the screen. And as soon as I see him backstage again, we'll welcome him.
I was trying to figure out what you were seeing there, Drew. I was like, to me, Wendell's all like just a white screen right now. So I didn't see him, but I was like, good on you for seeing something I'm not.
I think Wendell's just so excited to finally come on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I think there Wendell's good to go now,
there.
Drew.
There we go. There we go. Wendell Clark, there you are. Wendell, good morning. Can you hear us?
I can hear you.
Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Thrilled to have you join us on this Saturday morning.
Oh, good to be here, guys.
It's our pleasure. Like I mentioned, you're coming to Winnipeg for the Rady JCC dinner. Going to be on stage alongside Doug Gilmore and Grant Fuhr. We're going to get into your career. We're going to get into everything going around in the NHL. Just as a prelude, what happens when you and Dougie and Grant get together? You know, what kind of stories, what kind of shenanigans should people expect to hear coming up here in Winnipeg on May the 28th, pardon me.
Well, no, it's a lot of fun, right? From going to the Canada Cup tryouts where I met Fierzy and Dougie for the first time in probably 87 Canada Cup. Some of the best two guys, best hockey players of that era, plus fun guys to hang around with. I can remember Mike Keenan making us all get on the bike in training camp. It was August in 87. And Fierzy said, I got a tee time if you think I'm riding a bike right now. So that pretty much the best goalie in the game says he's not riding the bike. He's not riding the bike. So it's a lot of fun. And Dougie, he was the first, first big player got to play with in Toronto. And so a lot of stories, a lot of good times. So it'll be a lot of fun in Winnipeg.
What was it like? You know, you're from Saskatoon, or you played for the Blades. You're from Kelvington, Saskatchewan, if I'm not mistaken. That's at least the area you grew up with. You know, what was it like being a kid from Saskatchewan and then going to the bright lights of Toronto, to start your career back when you did?
It was fun. I'd left home probably like everybody, 13, 14, 15, to play in Yorkton. Triple A, then Notre Dame, South Regina, another great big town of 140 people to play Triple A hockey. And then Saskatoon Blades from there, and then the big smoke. But it's probably easier going from a small town than you ask city people to come and now live in a small town. You have to find things to do. It's I think it's harder on the people that go to small towns, small communities, and they grew up in a city. Coming from a small town, you're used to creating your own fun, and then you get to a city, well, there's just fun everywhere.
You know, Wendell, I want to mention my grandmother's from a small town. I don't even know if you've heard of it, Ryan, Saskatchewan, which is just a small little town. And my dad's from Flin Flon, which is obviously on the border. So I've got some Saskatchewan cred here, Wendell, not like Dave and Drew. They don't have any Saskatchewan street cred. So I just want to get in there. Obviously, it's, a friendly neighbor of Manitoba here. But I mean, there's so many things. And it's a, you know, I speak for all of us. It's a real thrill to have you on the show because you were one of my favorite players growing up, and obviously, you know, I got to go back. I told the guys, I'm like, I have to ask about the 1993 series because I think, you know, it's arguably some of the best hockey that's ever been played. I mean, you know, from the Leafs, obviously what Gretzky was doing at the expense of the Leafs, but we obviously could have had that, you know, Leafs Habs Stanley Cup final. But I mean, I know you've been asked about this so many times since your NHL career ended, but kind of what sticks out to you about that series, which obviously gave us the name of this hockey show, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What do you get? Did Marty McSorley get the call in the first game in Montreal, didn't he? That's what happened. Yeah. But it was great hockey. That whole era, I always say it starts kind of the Canada Cup in 87 when every game was 6-5 and you had offense, you had goaltending, you had everything. As a fan, so much went on. And that same thing in that 90s playoffs. Every game in that series against LA was quite a few goals. You were never out of it. Gretzky was being Gretzky. The goalies were good at the right time. You had all the different things going on. And so that was a real fun time, I think, for hockey.
Wendell, I got to ask, you know, you got to the league, your first overall pick. Your fight numbers were high, sky high. 30 in your second year, you had 23 in your first year. You fought guys like Bob Probert. What was it like to fight a guy with that sort of pedigree?
I wasn't very smart, is what you're saying. I always played a physical style coming out of junior. I think I had 30 fights a year in junior as well. So that was pretty much a style that I played and probably one you can't keep doing and play a lot. You watch guys over time, Ricky Tockett, Cam Neely, they all tailed off and became just did the skill part more than the fighting, and they always kind of had it. But it's hard on you, but it's a fun part. And when you play on a team that's not as good, that's when you end up fighting more because you're changing the game or waking the team up or you're doing something of that ilk, I guess. So we weren't a great team all the time. We always kind of made the playoffs in the 80s and had one or two rounds, but you're always changing it. And we happen to play in that Chuck Norris division, as it was called. And I think every team in the Chuck Norris division had three guys, whether it be Detroit, St. Louis, Minnesota, Chicago. There was always guys, and you pretty much the league was broken down into the different divisions on how the style was going to be played. And that rivalry with Detroit, we always played Friday in Detroit, Saturday in Toronto, and one of the two games was actually going to be a hockey game.
Wendell Clark, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Wendell will be in Winnipeg alongside Doug Gilmore and Grant Fuhr on May the 28th at the Rady JCC 50th Annual Sports Dinner. Tickets available radyjcc.com. Wendell, this is the last, as I'm sure you know, the last Saturday of the regular season. The Stanley Cup playoffs begin a week from today. You know, as a player and as you're sort of at the end of the regular season, you know, for these guys who know that they're going to be playing in the Stanley Cup playoffs, did your focus maybe begin to change at all? Did your attitude begin to change at all? Did you maybe get a little bit more dialed in over these last few games of the regular season when you knew that the Stanley Cup playoffs were impending and right around the corner?
Well, you're just coming out of the doldrums of the season. That end of February, early March as a player, we all hate it. It's like, okay, let's just get this over with. And the better you're playing as a team, the more in sync you feel, the more, you know, the more focus you are getting, you're getting ready for the next stage. And really, when you're a good team entering the playoffs, you didn't want to play teams that weren't in the playoffs, especially if they're not been in for a while, because they had no system going. They were just out there for fun. They're actually harder to beat than somebody that's getting ready for the playoffs, because they're just dressing rookies and they're flying around with high energy all over the place. And sometimes those games become harder than the games where the teams are really good that you're playing against. So at the end of the year, everybody's like anything, you see the end and you're just waiting to start what is really fun, the playoffs.
Yo, Wendell, I know, you know, we're this, the interview is focused on you and this is going to come back to you, but I know you're really involved with Maple Leafs alumni. And, you know, you go to a lot of Leafs games and, you know, there's a lot of connections obviously there between you and Austin Matthews, both first overall picks. And I know I've read articles and, you know, being asked about this, but I think it's even more relevant with Austin having a chance to hit 70 goals. He's getting into that Mario Lemieux, Brett Hull territory. But I guess the first question I have for you is, you know, how special is this season for Austin? Because he just keeps scoring and scoring and scoring. And you know, do you think he ultimately hits 70, which is obviously the million-dollar question?
Yeah, well, fingers crossed, going to the game maybe tonight, last right at home for the fans. That'd be fun.
Nice.
No, he's having a special season. He's a special player. He is growing, you know, from his first year just being kind of a pure big guy goal scorer. And now you watch him, how good he is defensively, how he looks when his teammates are scoring. He has more fun, I think, when he watches a teammate get a point or a goal and somebody to come back. He cheers the fighters on. He's really grown that way. And he's also grown as a player. Like his last two goals, he come in and from the slot in his area, you know, he's going to bury it if he's got time. And the next one, he's standing in the crease holding the defenseman off his back, waiting for Domi to pass it off his tape to go in the net. So now he's in that area. So he's learning as he gets older how to use his body to get himself in a shooting position. As long as the players know and they figure it out, as long as we hit Austin's stick, he can put it in the net. You don't worry about if somebody's covering him or not. He's that good and that he's very strong. He's very hard to handle for the other team's players.
You know, Wendell, I got to ask because I didn't realize this about you, but you started off as a defenseman in Saskatoon. So how did you make the transition from defense to forward?
No, I showed up at training camp and my name on the door said left wing with Gary Lehman and Russ Cortnell. Imagine doing that to the players today that you draft Austin Matthews and say you're going to play defense. That's pretty much, there was no discussions. Nobody talked about it. And I said, well, as long as I know I'm going back to junior, I'll stay and play forward. And that's where you want me. I just wanted to play. I was offensive physical defenseman. So switching to an offensive physical forward wasn't that big a stretch.
You know, Wendell Clark is our guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He'll be in Winnipeg May the 28th at the Rady JCC Sports Dinner. I want to say another big shout out to Andrew Jackson and the team at Jackson Events for facilitating this interview. That's terrific of Andrew helping us out here. You know, throughout your career, you play with a litany of great coaches, you know, including, of course, Pat Burns, you know, a famous, you know, former cop, transitions to be a great head coach in the NHL. What was it like, and a personality, a big personality, from your perspective, what was it like, you know, being coached by a guy like Pat Burns?
First off, all players hate coaches. they're there to push buttons. So half the time, and that I'm not far off, but I say that half the time, you know, we're young 20-year-old players. Coaches are all that 40 to 60-year-old guys. And so you're not going to see eye to eye. You know, that's just human nature. It's like everybody doesn't listen to their parents growing up all the time. And so Pat was the tough cop, definitely brought that mantra. He laid it down on a lot of us guys that were been in Toronto the whole time. So Todd Gill, myself, we took a blunt of a lot of stuff to try to make sure we didn't crack. And then when he was getting everybody else in, he used us as whipping dogs a little bit and then formed that team. Cliff Fletcher put that team together once he got to Toronto, then made the big trade and then made another big trade for Fierzy to Buffalo for Anderchuk to get the 50 goal guy to play with Dougie. And he did, you know, so Cliff put the team together. Burnsy, he's one of those coaches. I call them the 110% guys. All coaches that coach at 110%, they get fired every 3 years because they have a burnout factor, and they already know that. They know their personality. They know how they like to coach, and that's how they get the best. And he got the best out of us. Like you know, that team was as close. A lot of times he pushed buttons. And he loved that because then we'd all get tighter as a hockey team and be all mad at him. And that was kind of how he pushed the buttons. And then, you know, off the ice, heck, he had more fun than the players did. He, like you said, he looked like he off the ice, he had the fun, you know, as you've seen him on TV on the bench with the colorful ties and his hair slicked back. And, but he really put his system into play. And if everybody played what he wanted to do, and the big thing was every player playing the role that he put them in, his team's always won. He went from Toronto to Boston and did well. Jersey, you know, was he the only coach that's won the Adams on three different teams, I think, coaching or something like that? So he can coach it, but he coached that high intensity. I think he got a little softer as he got older, because as the people and kids change a bit, but he liked it. Fun on the ice, fun off the ice, and the guys, you know, like I said, I wasn't far off. I said half the guys hated him most of the time, but it wasn't a hate, as it was just because he was pushing buttons to make us a better player. And when you're a kid, you're just mad at the world because some old guy's yelling at you. But we had a lot of fun, and that was as close a team that I got to play on going to the semifinals there twice. So I can only imagine what it's like for guys that win the cup, how tight their hockey teams are.
As Drew mentioned, you're going to be in town with Dougie Gilmore and Grant Fuhr on Tuesday, May 28th for the Rady JCC dinner. And, you know, the Jets could be still in the playoffs at that point. Obviously, we're a Jets-centric show. Big game against the Avalanche this afternoon. Most likely, it's going to be the Jets and Avalanche in the first round. Could be, you know, the first game one in Winnipeg, could be game one in Denver. But I wanted to go back to your career, because obviously, you know, you played many times at the old Winnipeg Arena. And what kind of sticks out to you about, you know, that building, and, you know, just your memories of playing NHL hockey against the Jets 1.0?
Well, it was always great for me. That's coming back to Western Canada. There's always going to be a lot of people that you know coming to the game. Great energy in the building. We usually didn't like it because that usually meant if there's great energy, Howard Chuck had 5 points again. So that was kind of because we used to Dale, any of the original six or guys that played that are from Toronto, more in Toronto when guys like Howard Chuck or Messier or. Not Messier, but Gretzky would come to Toronto. They'd have huge nights because they're coming home to play. But in Winnipeg, we usually played a lot of times. We'd play Saturday night, and it used to be 8 o'clock start Saturday in Toronto. And then we'd play Sunday at like 4. And we'd be taking Air Niagara twin prop plane, and we'd have to land in Dryden for fuel about midnight. And then continue on. We get home in there about 4 in the morning and then have to play. And Howard Chuck would have 3 points before the end of the 10 minutes into the first. So, but it, just the energy, the fans were always great. The team was always very competitive. That was a tough division, you know, talking to Dave Ellett was there and then came to us in Toronto. And, you know, they had to play against Calgary and Edmonton in their heyday, right? When those two teams were as good as they can be. And they always lose in that first round to one of them in 7 games. And a lot of those times, I think they outplayed the Calgary or Edmonton. They just they didn't have Grant Fuhr in that, or they didn't have Mike Vernon in that type thing. So those are some good hockey teams and always competitive teams.
You know, Wendell, right now there's a lot of talk about relocation, and obviously the Jets were a beneficiary of that. So what was your impression when the Jets were announced to be coming from Atlanta to Winnipeg as a guy from, as we talked about, a prairie guy, seeing the Jets 2.0 coming back after so many years away?
Well, no, it's great. Anytime you know, the team was here and then left and came back, it's great to see it for the fans. It's a great hockey town, one of the great stops through Canada that the guys like playing in, and you want to see the team survive and thrive. You know, it's probably, you know, one of the things when you're in a smaller market, it's tough, you know, and for the teams. And so it really comes down to winning, because that's what makes, you know, people come out more. That you have to have a great team all the time. And that's not easy to do in a tight competitive league. And that drives your fan interest. But they've been good lately. And hopefully they can, you know, the fans show it. They always have some of the best energetic playoff fans that I've seen.
Wendell, we'll let you go on this last one. I know it's impossible to sort of compare eras and compare players, but when you watch the game today and you see some of the performances and the individual skill set that's on display, be it McDavid or McKinnon or Matthews in Toronto, and so many great players up and down the roster, what's your sort of overall impression of the game? Is it in a good place? Are you confident about the state of hockey nowadays, or are there elements of the game that sort of leave you a little concerned?
No, I think the game's in great shape. I think it depends which kind of team. There's a couple different styles, but you watch come playoff time, you get to see some of the older school stuff. The whistles get put away a little bit. The battling ratchet is up a little bit, but these guys are in today's game. They are so skilled. They get to grow up with great technology. So you're growing up with a little light hockey stick where we grew up with a fence post. And then you had to learn how to stick out with a fence post. And then you got to change it to a stick. And well, these guys get to grow up with perfect skates and coaches and the skill level and the speed that they can play the game at today. And I always tell parents today, because sometimes you're early at 10 years old, you think, well, we got to go out there and beat guys up. And I'm going, if you can't skate and think in the game today, you can't play. It is not an option. It was probably easier in my era to make it. So you went to training camp in junior, and you're usually the best player coming from your little town, and you get to the city to try out for your first junior team, and you find out that kids are pretty good. So you put your hand up and ask the coach, if I beat the guy up, can I stay? And so we always had that option when we grew up, where that's not an option anymore. So the skill level of skating and seeing the ice and the smarts, these kids are unbelievable.
Wendell, sorry, just one last question. And it's not, I'm not going to ask you if you can beat up Drew on May 28th. The question is going to be about you, Dougie Gilmore and Grant Fuhr. May 28th, of course, is the 50th annual Rady JCC dinner. Are you guys going to get together? Like, is there going to be some, pre-dinner meetings? Like, how are you guys going to prepare? Are you guys just going to kind of, a few hours before you guys will get together and, decide who's going to get the majority of the mic time?
Yeah, no, well, we don't know. We'll probably sit down and the great thing with having the event, having three guys at it like that, everybody plays off everybody. You never know where the story's going to go. And Dougie may see the game one way, and I see that same situation from a different angle because of how I play. And then Fierzy hates both of us because there's nobody back checking. And so it all comes together great in situation. So we're looking forward to a fun night there in Winnipeg.
Wendell Clark will be here May 28th, the Rady JCC 50th annual sports dinner. He'll be here alongside Doug Gilmore and Grant Fuhr. Tickets available, RadyJCC.com. Wendell, we're looking forward to it. We'll be at the dinner. We'll have a drink and we'll carry on this conversation. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Sounds good, guys. Thanks a lot.
Take care. There he goes, Wendell Clark, joining us this morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That was a lot of fun. What a personality.
Oh, God. I mean, like, I wasn't joking. I mean, look, we're all born, around the same time. Well, I mean, Drew, you were born in the 1940s, but
yes.
Dave and I were
gradually older as the show goes on. And like,
I'll remind people, back in the radio days, someone called in because they were confused. They're like, how they called, and it was back in the days of the R desk. With one Michael Remus, and someone said, I don't understand, like, how old is Drew? And Remus is like, he's like 11 months older than Ezzy. So we had to kind of clear that up because people didn't really understand that Richie and I have been calling Drew, I think, old since like high school. Yeah. I think back in the Gray Academy days, Drew. So, but I mean, the thing is, like, you think he's just he's the quintessential throwback old school hockey player, right? Like, mm-hmm. You mentioned it, like he would score 35, 40 goals and get 120, 150 penalty minutes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the guy, like, he's an absolute legend. If you ask Leafs fans who their favorite players of all time, obviously Austin Matthews is going to be in there, guys, Daryl Sittler, Borje Salming, like, but right at the top of that list is going to be Wendell Clark and Dougie Gilmore. Grant Fuhr, I mean, I didn't include him because he's better known as a Edmonton Oiler, but he played a little bit with the Leafs. But like, Wendell Clark is Mr. Toronto Maple Leaf, and it was just so much fun to have him on the show today.
Yeah, as long as he's still got the iconic mustache else, he looks great, and it's going to be a great night here coming up in about.
I mean, some fans were definitely hoping to get a little Chi-Chi's reference out of him.
A little Chi-Chi's reference, a little Palomino Club. I mean, it was
what about Campbell's Soup, guys? Remember Campbell's Soup?
Campbell's Soup.
Yeah. What was the slogan? I forget what the slogan was. Like, fork or spoon?
With a fork or a spoon. So you can eat it with a fork or a spoon or something.
How did we not ask him that question, actually?
Well, you know, that's something we'll ask him. We'll ask him in May is what we'll do there. Right. He also has a couple restaurants. I guess you got, you know, in the course of doing research for the interview, he's got a restaurant, I think, in Saskatoon and another one in Oshawa, like Wendell Clark's Sports Bar and Grill or something. Nice. Along those lines. So, you know, just great catching up with Wendell Clark, and big thanks to our friends at the Rady JCC, and big thanks to, of course, Jackson Events for facilitating that interview. We appreciate them making that happen. Really was a lot of fun indeed. Shifting back to the Jets, because we've got about 5 minutes to go on the show this morning, and of course the post game show coming up later on around 5:40 p.m. following the Jets and the Colorado Avalanche. You know, we were talking about, you know, Dylan Samberg. So, do you guys expect, as we sit here today, you know, 1 week before the, you know, 1 week before the start of the Stanley Cup playoffs, is it your guys' expectation that Dylan Samberg is going to be on the right side with Logan Stanley for game one of the playoffs?
Well, I mean, it's right now it's looking like that, Drew. Obviously, you know, we don't have a crystal ball, but, and obviously Dave will give his take here, but I mean, I think the game against Dallas solidified it somewhat, right, Dave? Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I think there's way more certainty with the forward lines, right? Niederreiter is not playing this afternoon. We already mentioned that. He goes back on the third line. David Gustafson comes out of the lineup. He becomes your 13th forward, and then the fourth line and the top two lines stay the same. And I don't know why you would expect them to change. Obviously, you know, if players are slumping in the series, then maybe you see Nikolai Ehlers elevated to the first line, Dave, or maybe, you know, you see someone else elevated on the bottom lines. But getting back to the D pairings, Morrissey DeMello, I mean, that just write that in stone. I mean, that's not why wouldn't you have that? That's been your top pair for years now. Mm-hmm. But I think based on what happens in series, right, Drew? And I agree with you. The only question mark, I think, on the back end is Neil Pionk. And again, we're not purposely picking on Neil Pionk. He's just struggled. I think most Jets fans would agree with that he has struggled in that second pairing role. So I will say this, if Neil Pionk is struggling against the Colorado Avalanche, and, you know, even though I agree with Sean to a certain extent that they're a little bit top heavy, but, you know, Ross Colton is centering that third line. I know Zach Parise is the other winger on that line. I'd have to check. I forget. Who did they acquire at the trade deadline?
Brandon Duhaime.
Brandon Duhaime. There you go. I was going to say they acquired somebody else. Yakov Trenin, he's on the fourth line. Mm-hmm. They made a couple acquisitions because O'Connor's out, I believe, for the season, including the playoffs. So, I think that the Jets are deeper at forward, 1-12. Than the Avalanche, but I'm just saying, if Neil Pionk struggles against the Casey Mittelstadt line, because obviously, Dave, you expect Morrissey and DeMello, when the Jets can get that matchup, they would be matched up against the MacKinnon, Rantanen, and Jonathan Drouin line, Dave. Mm-hmm. All I'm saying is, so, you know, in a roundabout way, Drew, I do think it'll be Stanley and Samberg on the third pair, unless something changes, and then you can always move Samberg up to play with Brendan Dillon, and then Pionk plays with Logan Stanley. I would be a little bit nervous about the Stanley Pionk pairing on the, you know, as your third pair, but I think, you know, a lot has changed, Drew, even in the last 4 or 5 days. I still, you know, would have said 4 or 5 days ago that I prefer, you know, Stanley and Nate Schmidt as your third pair, but Logan Stanley's impressed me. So my opinion has changed on this.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I think also whether you have home ice advantage is going to play a factor potentially in who comes in. Maybe if Rick Bowness feels that he can get the matchups he wants at home, he's more inclined to use certain pairings versus when they're on the road. So maybe situationally, similar to Perfetti being that top six, number seven, and Gustafson being the bottom six, number seven, maybe you see Rick Bowness using that. But I'm with Ez, like if you, as we see this stay longer and longer together, especially as the season gets closer, because Rick Bowness was asked, are you going to give guys rest? Now he may in game 82, but he doesn't, you know, it's the rust versus rest sort of rationale is, do you want to give guys, like, let's be realistic. This Jets team hasn't practiced a lot because of course how condensed games were in March. They mm-hmm. practiced a little bit more in April, but the fact of the matter is this team has given a lot of rest to their guys. So while guys like Adam, like you're seeing more guys like Sean Monahan is the guy who's been taking a lot of rest, but now Adam Lowry's taking more rest. Now, is that because he's banged up or what? But maybe it's management of his, you know, of his body to make sure he's ready to go when playoff time comes. And so for me, Drew, like I said, I don't know that they're going to want to give, they may give guys off that the game on Thursday. Can't believe, by the way, as an aside, even though this show is winding down, I can't believe the regular season is finally winding down. And we're at game 80 today. And now in, you know, by Thursday, I was looking at it on Thursday. I was like, can't believe there's only a week left in the regular season. Well, so
to your point though, there, Dave, briefly, I mean, I think that, you know, if the Jets could know, I mean, that, you know, like I said, at by 6 o'clock tomorrow, if the Jets know that they've clinched second place, boy, does that sort of free up this week. You have, you're going to have a week where you can really pick and choose and try and get some guys some time off the ice, and no one's going to be fully healed. And of course, that's not going to happen until the off season. But just being able to really take any significance out of games 81 and 82, I think would certainly be advantageous as you await the start of the as you await the start of the playoff series, whether that's going to be next Saturday, next Sunday, or next Monday, you know, whatever of those 3 days and wherever the series starts, I think that's a really going to, that could be a bit of, I'm not going to say significant, but it certainly could be a legitimate benefit for the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, regardless if Pionk is moved down to the third pair, boys, I mean, they're going with this top six, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it, all indications are, and you're right, Drew, I think you might see both Nate Schmidt and Colin Miller get one of those last two games. And I think that might have a little bit depending on, you know, if that game has playoff implications, because as we talked about, the Jets beat the Avalanche clean, and then the Avalanche lose to the Golden Knights. The game against the Kraken is essentially meaningless in terms of playoff implications. So then that's where Nate Schmidt gets his game. That's where maybe Colin Miller gets his game. But, you know, as of now, it looks like, you know, it's going to be Logan Stanley in your top six, and it looks like it's going to be Neil Pionk in your top six. So Pionk has to elevate his game, right? And I thought he was much better, boys, against Dallas than he was against Nashville, right? He struggled against Nashville, giving the puck away. And he has struggled at times defensively, but there's no doubt about what he can do offensively, right? Whether that's on the second power play unit, you know, he's having a pretty decent offensive season. So, you know, Pionk is going to be a key player, Drew, to your point.
There's no other option.
You're not going to beat Colorado unless your entire team is playing well. And Sean mentioned this, like, that's why this is going to be such a fascinating series, because both of these teams were out in the first round. So both of these teams want to go on long playoff runs, right, guys? Like, this isn't a situation where the Jets or Avalanche are like, yep, you know, we just limped into the playoffs. You know, we're happy. You know, maybe we'll, you know, maybe it'll be a 5-game series. Maybe it'll be a 6-game series. Both of these teams are going for the Stanley Cup. And both of these teams have weaknesses. We talked about it. The Jets have the edge when it comes to forward depth. I would give a big edge, especially with the acquisition of Sean Walker. I mean, we know they already have Kale McCarr and Devon Taves and Josh Manson, Jack Johnson. Like, the Avs have a great group of defensemen, so you give them the edge there. But the big edge for the Jets is in goal with Hellebuck and Brassois. I don't think anybody is giving the Avalanche the edge. So it's going to be a 6 or 7 game series. But yes, Neil Pionk, there's more question marks around him, Drew, to kind of, you know, put a bow on this. I mean, you know what you're going to get out of Josh Morrissey and Dylan DeMello, Brendan Dillon, Dylan Sandberg, even Logan Stanley. There's not a lot of question marks about his game. He's been pretty solid. So, you know, hopefully, you know, and I think Pionk will be solid for the Jets in the playoffs. I'm optimistic that, you know, he has that in him.
The glass half full Ginsburg is what we call him. The Jets and the Avalanche, puck drop 3 o'clock, post game 5:40 p.m. this afternoon. Dave and I will drive the post game bus later on. We encourage you all to join us. We encourage you all to, of course, smash the like button, subscribe to the YouTube channel, subscribe to the podcast, and leave us some feedback here, there, and everywhere about everything you saw and heard this morning. Want to say a big thank you to all the sponsors who made this show a possibility. Rumor Kramer's Restaurant and Comedy Club. Tonight, Kevin Bozeman in town, two shows, 7:15, 9:45. Limited tickets available for both. Our friends at Grid Park, use code IllegalCurve to park for free. Linden Market Dental Center, Zappia Group Realty, Betway, Tough Duck, Boston Pizza, Seagram's, Rolly's Transfer, Farmery, and Farmery Beer support these fine businesses because of their continued support of Illegal Curve Hockey. Illegal Curve is a proud media sponsor of the upcoming Rady JCC Sports Dinner that's coming up on May the 28th. Big thanks to the Rady and Andrew Jackson Events for facilitating today's interview with Wendell Clark. In case you missed any of that interview, or if you missed any of the interview with Sean Reynolds or any of the show altogether, it will soon be available for podcast and, of course, the instant replay on our YouTube channel. Big thanks to all of you for joining us. Big thanks to Dave Manuk. Big thanks to Ezra Ginsberg. We will see you later on this evening around 5:40 p.m. Until then, we remind you that if it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms.
Thanks for listening to this broadcast from Illegal Curve Hockey. For more great Illegal Curve content, subscribe to the Illegal Curve YouTube channel, follow at Illegal Curve on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and visit your online home for hockey in Winnipeg, illegalcurve.com.